Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a trend presentation from April 2016. Ms. Anne Prahl, independent research, trend and design consultant, concept and design, presents Designing With, Designing Out Waste.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming to this presentation. My name is Pamela. I'm the CSR and head of CSR and sustainability for the European Outdoor Group. For those that don't know who we are the membership organization of internationally operating outdoor brands in Europe. And my role today is to lead through the program all day, through all presentations, which also means that I'm in possession of this hand mic for any questions after the presentation. We will definitely have time to ask questions. I'm the one to run around and try to get to you before you ask it without Mike. But without further ado, I would like to introduce Anne Prahl. She's a designer by trade, by training, in every sense of the word. And what she's going to be talking about is not just designing with waste, which is upcycling, but how a designer's role is to minimize waste, to get design the waste out of their designs to start with. We all always talk about the cutting efficiency in our processes. This is even a step before that. Think proto one stage. How do you reduce waste at that very early stage? She will also look into the role of wearables. We're all doing sports. They're all big brands that come with new ideas, in particular in sports, was how you integrate electronics in what is coming out, how wearable computing starts playing a role in textiles. And she will also look into that, what that means for recycling of fabrics. And with that, it's all your stage, Anne.
Thank you. So yes, as Pamela said, sorry, is this too loud? It's very loud in my head. For the next 30 minutes or so, I will be talking about the concept of designing with waste, but more importantly, designing out waste, and also how this can inspire innovation for performance sportswear in the future. So we will look at first at designing with waste and designing out waste, and then I will introduce you, unless you've already heard about this problem, to the challenges of and opportunities for textile-based wearable technology with a particular interest in the end of life. And then we'll finish off with a little summary, and hopefully you'll have some questions as well so we can have an interesting debate. So, over the last few years, we've really seen a huge increase in material innovators addressing the problem of waste. And they've done this by upcycling waste materials through new processes and systems and creating really exciting new sportswear fabrics. And as we can see on the left here, plastic bottles have really been the most well-known example of how one industry's waste can become another industry's treasure, as we've seen so many examples of how post-consumer waste, like plastic bottles, have been recycled into polyester by Nike for their Olympic soccer kits. But also here at the show, there's lots of recycled polyester. So the whole idea of plastic bottles is really the first and the most sort of prominent trend. But this approach of designing with waste also works for other types of waste materials, and this includes post-consumer non-textile waste, such as fishing nets, which you can see on the left-hand side. So one of the first recycled nylon fabrics in the market was the Mipan Regen, which was created from fishing nets. And the image here shows the swimwear brand EcoPanda, who first utilized this recycled nylon in 2009, so quite a while back. And more recently, we've seen the Spanish brand EcoAlf, who've developed a way to recycle the waste tires you can see on the left. And they're separating the various materials inside these tires to create a clean powder that can be used to provide a new material for flip-flops and trainers. So, designers and fashion students have also been really keen to work with post-consumer textile waste. And the image on top shows work from some of the students I work with at VIA University College in Denmark, who did a really exciting redesign recycling project a couple of years ago. And you can watch the film on YouTube. And just to let you know that when you download this presentation, all the links will be there with various films as well to see. So the images below show the work of the Outdoor Waste Lab, or OWL for short. And they had a really great display at ISPO. Some of you may have seen this when you visited ISPO. And OWL is a team of designers, stylists, and graphic designers. And they collect end-of-life clothing or materials from surf and outdoor brands. And then create new, really unique products, such as the accessories you see on the left, like purses and little bags. And what happens to this second life product then, they either sell it back to the brand where they got the waste from so they can sell it themselves, or they sell these sort of quirky accessories on the online website Etsy. So my own first experience in designing with post-consumer waste arose when I did an MA design for Textile Futures. And I identified discarded swimwear as a key problematic material and product, because swimwear is one of these things no one wants to wear. Secondhand swimwear, you can't reuse it. You go to any Oxfam or secondhand shop and the rail of swimwear will be untouched. Even you wouldn't really want to pass it on to friends or family. So this is a kind of material that no one really, a product that no one wants to wear again. So I felt strongly that we needed to find a way of recycling discarded swimwear into something. So I came up with this idea of recycling. You can see the bikini bottoms here on the left, and they were recycled. They were taken apart into flock material. So I created a flock, and then this turned into the embellishment on the bikini on the right. So the idea was also to really start thinking about embellishments. How could they become sustainable and recycled? Because normally we might be able to use recycled fabrics, but what do we put on them to put our graphics on? So the idea was to come up with a recycled embellishment. And then at the end of the life of that bikini, you could then, in theory, recycle the entire garment and the flock to make more flock for new swimwear. So this was an interesting concept, but I didn't pursue it following my studies, but it led me to a very exciting project for Speedo. So Speedo had come to my MA show and seen my bikini flock and knew I was interested in recycled swimwear. So when I got the phone call that 18,000 laser suits had been banned and did I want to do something with them, I was clearly very excited, but also a little bit frightened. So this project was really about the reuse, recycling, and remanufacture of these 18,000 swimsuits. And you can see the actual suit, the first image here in the middle. This is what it looked like before it was recycled. And the reason it was banned was because the material was so amazing that it made everyone swim faster. Because this aided the buoyancy, but also cut down the drag in the water. So all these athletes were suddenly breaking records, and it was deemed, an unfair advantage. This didn't only happen to Speedo, this happened to lots of other swimwear brands, and consequently, the suits were banned, not just the material, but also the fact the all body suits with zips, because they were just made people swim too fast. So basically, I was then involved in managing and initiating some really exciting projects with the label from somewhere, Ursula de Castro, who has a recycling label in London, and she created a really amazing dress. Anyway, the dress, On the right is Ursula de Castro. And what's exciting is she didn't just do a one-off collection, but she established a relationship with Speedo to work with their post-consumer, but also with their production waste. So this really led to a very useful collaboration. And the image on the left, you can see the work by students from London College of Fashion. They created some amazing pieces out of this, you know, sportswear item. They came up with amazing underwear and sportswear. But what the big surprise was how suitable this high-tech performance material was for architectural structures, because at the bottom, you can see we actually created, I collaborated with students from Chelsea College of Art and Design, and we designed and created several pavilions, which were outdoor structures, which were absolutely amazing in all types of weather, particularly when it rained. I don't have the image here, but they were just amazing because some of the areas were totally waterproof while other areas weren't. So this pavilion was actually exhibited in the Cass Sculpture Park in West Sussex. And the other one was exhibited at a trade show called EcoBuild. So I don't know if you've seen this anywhere in the press, but there's also some great videos to watch which are at the end of the presentation. So, and what this speaks about is really the industry, the waste from one industry, in this case the sports industry, became a really valuable raw material for the architectural industry. So when we look at working with waste, we don't just have to keep it to ourselves. We can also waste that we can't deal with as designers, we can pass on to other industries because it might be much more suitable to their industry. The concept of designing with waste is great, but it's often criticized as being superficial and just transitional because although it helps reducing waste, it doesn't get rid of the waste or eliminate waste in the first place. So therefore, designing out waste is often referred to just as a waste management strategy, which is not really what we want. What we want to do is we want to come up with ways how we can design out the idea of waste. So, and I really like this quote from Eric Lombardi, who said that waste is the result of bad design. Waste needs to be designed out at the designer's desk. So this puts a huge responsibility at designers, you know, at the designer's desk, basically, to start thinking about, you know, how to go about that. And this quote also goes really hand in hand with the knowledge that up to 80% of the environmental impact of a product is actually determined at the design stage. So any design decisions that we make, are hugely contributing to what to do with the product at end of life or how it will impact the environment. So as a result, lots of designers are taking action to design out waste, and this needs to be integrated into the concept stage, even before you've started designing. And a great example here is the image you can see of Timo Rissanen. He's one of the pioneers of the zero waste concept. And you can see the pattern piece next to the hooded sweatshirt, where he's utilized every inch of the material. So there's absolutely no waste in the pattern. And what it also does, it really creates an interesting new shape for a hooded sweatshirt because it looks very different to your ordinary sort of hood to sleeves and body. In line with the waste hierarchy, which is reduce, reuse, recycle, recycling should really be the last option. And as designers, what we should look at is the reduction and reuse of clothing and materials because they're considered much more preferable in terms of the environmental impact. So therefore, the concept of pre-consumer waste reduction makes great sense. And here you can see a few examples. The first image, again, shows zero waste, but this time a student applied this idea of zero waste to an outdoor jacket. And it looks really nice and clean. And as you can see from the pattern, again, there's no material wasted. Then next to it, you see everyone knows Nike's Flyknit technology. And this reduces waste through the one piece upper construction. But because it has been around for a while, we now actually know how much waste this construction reduced. And Nike have said that it reduces waste by about 60%, and it has eliminated nearly 3.5 million pounds of waste since 2012. So this was a great concept in footwear, but we haven't really seen that come through in clothing yet. I mean, there's lots of people working with knit to fit and working on 3D knitted ideas. So hopefully we're going to see much more of this kind of approach. And another great approach is the innovation of new processes. And material innovators are making advances in developing more flexible and textile-like 3D materials, as you can see here. And this is a lovely soft 3D printed material, which was inspired by knitting. And it utilized selective laser sintering from researchers at the Manchester School of Art. So in line with the concept of reducing textile waste, other strategies include repair and reuse of products. And there are some great examples out there already. So the first image, Patagonia already offers a very popular in-house repair service, and they've repaired thousands of jackets. But what they've focused on more recently is to actually involve the consumer in the repair, rather than saying, send us your stuff, we'll repair it for you. They said, hey people, you can repair your own stuff. And the way they've done this is they've teamed up with the website iFixit, which you can see on the first image. And as a consumer, you can go on there and download patterns and instructions how to repair things, and it will tell you what things you need, needle and thread, whatever. And they have instructions for their most popular styles and also things like zip repair and luggage. So this is a really great way to make consumers start repairing their stuff. And another initiative that they're doing is the Patagonia Wornwear. And the image is on the right, and they have a really great blog and website called Wornwear, where they tell all these amazing stories of how people have repaired their clothes and the stories how they got ripped in the first place. And there's one guy on there who's got a jacket that's been repaired, and he said, oh, that was when I got chased by the bear in Yosemite. So it almost becomes a medal, a trophy. You know, the more repairs you have, the more adventures you've led. So it's really about how to sell repair to the consumer and making it something cool and desirable. And the great news is that the Patagonia Wornwear wagon, which is a little lorry where you can have you can learn how to repair things. It's coming to Europe, and it's coming to the UK next week. And I'm sure it'll be. Oh, it was here already. Oh, well, I thought it started in the UK. Okay.
Actually, it is already. It was last week in Keswick in the Lake District.
Oh, I thought it's next week, 20. But anyway, so there's a van near you trying to help you repair your stuff. And I had time to actually pop into the Patagonia store yesterday in Schwabing, and they have great catalogs to tell you all about repair and in-store. So if you have time to go to Patagonia, you can sort of see a few of their repairs in store. Another company at the bottom, you see Houdini, the outdoor brand. They're also really supporting the reuse concept, and they offer rental, which is a great idea because a lot of people want to have the latest gear all the time when they go mountaineering. But if you buy the latest jacket this season, then you can't really buy a new jacket with a new technology next season. So Houdini rent out their shell garments, so you can take them out just for a long weekend or for a holiday. And the benefit is you don't have to look after the garment. You can just give it back damp and muddy. You don't have to clean it. You don't have to worry about anything. So that's a really great idea, and other brands are also doing this now because they realize it's a really good customer service to offer. And then, of course, they also offer reuse because once these garments have been worn a few times or rented out, they sell them as second-hand garments. So some people might be happy with buying a second-hand technical garment. And if you're interested in this whole idea of reuse in more detail, there'll be a talk by Don Gladstone at 3:45, particularly about the reuse of outdoor gear. So that will be interesting. So I spoke about upcycling of textile and non-textile waste earlier, but the ultimate goal in recycling is really closed-loop recycling, where textile waste is eliminated and raw materials can be used and reused as part of a circular economy. So most of you will be familiar with Teijin's EcoCircle system. This was started in 2002. And it made it possible to recycle end-of-life polyester into new polyester. So that's the image on the left. But since then, since 2002, many other brands and manufacturers have been working on developing closed-loop systems. And try the pointer again. The board brand Riz, can you see the light? Oh, I can't see it. Oh, yes. So the board brand Riz, they offer recycled and recyclable shorts. And what's really important is everything in this short has been recycled and is recyclable. So this includes the trims, the zips, the threads, and also the draw cords. So it's not just the material. So when you're thinking about closed loop, you have to be really clear that all the components are recyclable again. And below the row below, you see the Puma InCycle initiative, which was a great concept where clothing, footwear, and accessories were designed to be either biodegradable, so that was trainers and stuff, and then they had recyclable tracksuit tops. You can see the image here. So that was an in-store collection where people could take back their stuff. Then also we have Aquafil, who partnered with Speedo to take back their post-manufacturing waste. So this is the pre-consumer waste I was talking about earlier. So Speedo and Aquafil together developed the 100% regenerated Econyl nylon. And I've seen it around here at the show as well. There's other brands working with Econyl with recycled nylon. And more recently, Adidas have been working on a really exciting cross-industry project. So this is a European project with lots of different researchers involved. And they're trying to develop materials and products that are suitable for so-called infinity cycling. So this is their sort of new term for this closed loop idea. So that's really great to see. And if you want to hear more about recycling, there's another presentation just about recycling by Charles today at 2:45. So also should be interesting. So now we've heard all these great examples about designing out waste in sportswear. I would really like to take this opportunity to raise awareness of the challenges for textile-based wearable technology, and in particular with a look to the environmental impact at end of life. So over the last couple of years, there has been a huge rise in sale of activity and fitness trackers. And in line with that trend, we're also seeing more and more sports clothing with integrated sensors, both for professional athletes, but also for recreational sports and fitness consumers, or people who are just interested in well-being. So one of the first products was the Pneumatrax bra here. They also did vests for men in 2006, so this has been going on for quite a while. This is a heart-sensing sports bra, and then since that one, we've seen lots of other things come through, like the Under Armour biometric compression shirt. Then the next one is Pneumatrax Adidas MyCoach heart rate shirt. And then we've also seen collaborations of here Polo Sport together with OmSignal, who produced a biometric sensing shirt. But also we're seeing some interesting things being added. I don't know, the pictures are very light. If you download it, you can see them better. So the brand Athos here, they produce heart rate monitoring sportswear, but also muscle tracking. And muscle tracking is really important to see if you're training well, or to improve your training or your performance. And the same with the Myontech EMG shorts that are equipped with sensor to react to your muscles and let you know whether you're fatigued or whether you need to change your actual training or what you're doing. So at the moment, all this is still considered a bit of a niche market because also it's very expensive. But the sports and fitness performance wearables market is anticipated to reach $14.9 billion by $2,000, it's important to say, $14.9 billion by 2021. So this is going to be a huge market, and a very big proportion of this is going to be clothing with integrated sensors. So I think we really need to start thinking about this. So what's the problem? We've got a new product category in sportswear, and it's going to be huge, so we should all be excited. But there is a problem, because most of these smart clothes utilize electronic textiles to function, and they also integrate electronically enabled sensors and other components. And these three images illustrate that society is already struggling with the amount of electronic waste, and you can see this child in China just sitting playing in electronic waste. And we've got huge issues already with just ordinary textiles in landfill. We haven't really figured out what to do with those, although there's ideas coming through. So by bringing together, textiles and electronics into one garment, we are just making the situation much more difficult. So in 2008, Andreas Köhler identified the challenge in his Master of Science thesis, and you can see his quote here. He concluded that by integrating electronics into textiles, we're actually creating a new waste stream, and that this would be very difficult or impossible to deal with. He pointed out that current textile recycling facilities and systems are not yet equipped to deal with this kind of hybrid product, because most of the time the electronics are actually hidden. There might be batteries in there, electronics. People who chuck away their stuff wouldn't take it out. So the textile recyclers are not aware that the electronics are in these garments, and they could cause hazards in recycling or could contaminate fibers. So having recently spent 3.5 years working in this field on my own practice-based PhD, I sadly have seen very little evidence of anyone taking responsibility for this, or indeed coming up with any new solutions, or even talking about it. It's sort of a not talked about sort of secret. But now it's out. Electronic textiles are terrible for end of life, so it's not a secret. So following on from Köhler's work, my research highlights that the wearable tech industry has been really consumed with the aim to seamlessly integrate electronics into textiles, rather than working out how textile-based wearable technology could be designed to address end-of-life issues. So we're seeing all these amazing ways of integrating electronics. We've got the knitted examples, the knitted textile-based electrodes from Pneumatrex in the first picture. Then we've got the stitched-in pressure sensors in this sock, which is an amazing sock, but the electronics are in the sock and can't be taken out at end of life. Then we have the printed sensors here, which are great printed underwear that can tell you about your well-being or someone else. So that's a way of including, smart sensors. Then we have the Google and Levi's collaboration, the Jacquard project, which is woven sensors and woven electronics. So again, they're woven into your jeans, so it will be pretty difficult to take back out. And then the sort of most futuristic looking is sort of the laminated and ultrasonically welded Adidas and Lululemon, the way they've integrated the sensors in their clothing. In line with the great examples of designing out waste in the field of performance sportswear, we now really need to start developing concepts for designing out end-of-life issues for this type of product. And it needs to come as part of the innovation process, not as an afterthought. And as we heard earlier, you know, 80% of the impact is decided at design stage. So in the future, when designers sit down to design wearable electronics, then they need to think about this from the start before they've started designing. So the question is whether we could adopt a closed loop approach somehow to the design of textile-based wearable technology so that we can make them recyclable or biodegradable. So in my own research, I've been really inspired by the groundbreaking innovation of the new types of sensors like the electronic skin. I don't know how well you can see it. So this is it's like a rubber skin-like sensor, and also here. So these kind of rubbery skin-like materials are really great. And even things like, we also have paper-based sensors. So it's really easy to print cheap paper-based sensors, which could, in theory, be biodegradable. So I think we could really find some inspiration in these crazy new materials coming through, and they're all non-woven. That's what they all have in common. It's really about looking beyond traditional knitted and woven textiles that we've seen being used in electronics. So, of course, as we're using sensors and electronic networks, if we want to make wearable technology biodegradable, or we want it to be disassembled for recycling, we have to think about all the components, not just the fabric. So currently, this is a tall order, but we're seeing really exciting developments for transient and biodegradable electronics, and also new technologies to disassemble and recycle really complex products. So transitional or biodegradable electronics are a really interesting starting point. And transient electronics are electronics that can dissolve at a prescribed time and could therefore lead to reducing the amount of electronics going into landfill. Also, they're being made utilizing environmentally friendly products and processes. Because they're using biocompatible materials and components. And you can see the first two images, these two sensors. This is a sensor, actually electronics, you know, dissolving. So it's literally dissolving into nothing. And the second image, this is a sensor that will be biodegradable and is actually integrated into biodegradable material. So this is really exciting stuff. And then we also have, obviously, we need to think about batteries and printing inks. And the third image is that of a battery made from wood pulp. And they're also using cuttlefish ink to make it conductive. So there's some really crazy stuff going on. And I think this will be very exciting to look at this area to see how it could inform maybe the design of wearable technology in the future. So when we look at inspiration for recyclable textile-based wearable technology, we could learn from disassembly technologies from other products. And here are two great examples. On the left, you see something called active disassembly. And this is something that has been developed for over 15 years now, so it's taken them quite a while. And it's been developed for mobile phones between researchers and Nokia. They've come up with a way how to use this process by applying heat. The elements and the components are all released and can be individually recycled. And on the right, this is from the field of textiles and clothing. It's a new stitch technology called Wear 2. Which was developed by a UK consortium. And this utilizes a microwave treatment. to disassemble entire garments. So you end up, a t-shirt would be in, you'd have all the separate panels, but you can also take out the zips and the buttons, and every component is reusable. So that's the beauty of this. I mean, this is a very recent research project, and it's only just sort of become available in terms of, you know, looking at their website. But it's a really great start to looking at how disassembly could be facilitated in the future. So I think both of these could really give us ideas how, and maybe the second one would work well for applications for electronic textiles. It's not been done yet, but it's something hopefully you could see going forward. So based on the exciting non-woven materials that I showed you on the previous slide, I really believe that in order to develop closed-loop concepts for wearable technology, we need to ask ourselves, what is a wearable material? What could a wearable material be, rather than thinking, I need a textile to produce some clothing? Why don't we just make it a wearable material, which gives us just far more scope to go beyond these conventional knitted and woven textiles. So here you can just see some food for thought or some sort of initial ideas. The Nike bag you see on the left uses this green panel here, is a 3D printed panel. But I think in the future, it should be made from biodegradable 3D printed material like this. The image on the right, this is actually an insect habitat that was created by 3D printing and uses natural materials, so it will biodegrade, you know, when the insects have finished with it, and just sort of biodegrade into the nature in the forest. And looking below on the left, we have the 3D printed bikini, which probably lots of you have already seen. And this is currently made from thousands of little nylon plates. But again, in the future, we should be using biodegradable 3D printing, such as the image on the right. This is 3D printing used for bones that are put inside the body, and they dissolve inside your body. So there's all these crazy materials already out there in the medical sector. So I think it'd be really interesting, you know, to look at what's going on in the medical sector for the kind of materials that we might want to design in the future. Another really interesting trend is the convergence of 3D printing and 3D knitting, and it's almost sort of coming into one. You see all these structures where you're not quite sure, is it knitting, is it printing? And the image on the left shows recyclable uppers that are made from a 3D knitting process that's really soft and pre-shaped. So this is a student from the Royal College of Art who came up with this process. And then on the right again, this is another swatch from the Manchester School of Art who've produced these flexible knitted 3D materials, and they very much look like they've been hand-knitted. So the beauty is to bring together the traditional, you know, look of hand-knitting, but creating it in a future material. And 3D knitted and printed products should really all be designed to be recyclable. We shouldn't use any other raw materials. And Adidas have already developed a 3D printed midsole, picture on the left, that is recycled from fishing nets, and we've seen a lot of that around here as well in fabrics. But really, things that are made from recycled products should then also be recyclable again. And I found this great little machine on the right, it's called the Cruncher, and this Cruncher is capable of recycling any plastic. It's actually something people can buy in their home or in their studio, designers can have in their studio. It crunches any 3D printed things that you don't like anymore, that went wrong, or any other plastic, and provides you your own raw material to use again. So these kind of, there's lots of these type of Cruncher type products coming out. So hopefully we'll see more of that in a bigger industrial space, not just for the sort of DIY people and the sort of makers. So recently, we've also seen great innovation in potentially biodegradable or recyclable wearable materials made through spraying processes. So lots of people are using lots of different ways to spray materials. So the first one, I mean, this has been around for a long time, so some of you may have seen this already. It's called Fabrican, and this is a material that comes out of a spray can, and it can be sprayed on your body so you can make your own design. You can then cut it. You could cut the sleeves off. So apart from potentially being biodegradable or recyclable subject to the material mix in your can, you know, you can also customize it. And also it will be very comfortable and fit you, you know, because you've sprayed it on your body. So it will fit just you. The material next to it is a material called Cozy Flex, produced by Tummy Care in the UK. And they make this through a spray, through spray nozzle printing, very difficult to say. And they print onto a plate. That's at the moment, they're mainly manufacturing underwear. So they have this plate in an underwear shape and just spray on it. So then you have literally your pattern piece. So that's a really interesting material as well. And then at the bottom, you've got Electroloom, who've been in the press a lot recently. They're 3D printing, which utilizes cut designs, molds, and templates to spray print again. And you can see the material they're currently producing on the right. Looks really nice and soft and not something that you know, we would expect from 3D printing. And what all of these sort of new processes have in common is that biodegradable or recyclable electronic components or inks could actually be added during the manufacturing process. So this is really, this is very much, you know, looking at the future and hoping that together, you know, as the different industries can work together to develop this for the sportswear sector. And Tummy Care, who are producing the Cozy Flex, are already working with a graphene scientist and inventor to actually make you know, integrate wearable technology into their sprayed underwear. So that's one to look out for. So just to summarize, I just want to remind you of the key points that I'd like to make. So material innovators and designers need to think beyond recycling in order to reduce and eliminate waste during the manufacturing, in-use, and end-of-life stages of product. And when developing future performance sportswear fabrics and products, we need to address the end-of-life implications for all technologies, specialist technologies, such as electronic and smart textiles. And that really includes nanotechnology, the polymers, and performance coatings and finishing, obviously, we have. So it's not just electronics that we need to worry about. And then finally, for the opportunities, in order to truly innovate new performance fabrics, I feel we need to move away from the restrictions of traditional knitted and woven textiles to really explore what a wearable material could constitute in the future. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Annette. It's now an opportunity for people who do have questions to ask them. And I'm not sure, I saw someone with a blue thing there right in front. So if there are questions, that's an opportunity now. Otherwise, I have one question to finish up with. And it's actually quite quick, but what we've seen today is really a paradigm shift in many ways, and yet schools work the way they do in training people. So where are we at with introducing these things into the curriculum of training designers? And what is your take on where we are at, but both of us, well, where we still have to go in that context?
It's working, yes. Actually, I'm lucky enough to be involved in a lot of educational work myself, and having run design projects, you know, with students at Chelsea and London College of Art, of fashion. When I first came in there, let's say with the Speedo suit project, they all looked at me horrified because they had no idea. No one had ever mentioned to them anything about sustainability, but this was about 6 years ago. And what I can say is that in the last 6 years, you know, the arena has changed and there's so many more people coming in to teach about sustainability and particular strategies. Especially in the UK, we see all these new courses that actually focus on, you know, teaching the young generation of designers how to integrate this kind of thinking, you know, from the start, because there's no point doing it afterwards. If you've worked, like me, I went back to university after 20 years of designing badly. I went back to university to figure out, what does sustainability mean? How can I become a sustainable designer? And it's taken me 9 years to roughly know where I'm going. But so it's an ongoing thing, but I think everyone needs to be aware of it. And especially bringing together sustainability and wearable technology, for me, is a huge problem that no one knows how to tackle. And with my PhD, I felt like I had to make a start. And I'm here today to sort of share that with you and hope to inspire others, you know, to take this on as well, because it's going to be a collaboration effort. It's not one person can sort this out.
And with that as a final word, thank you very much for having attended this session. I hope you enjoyed it. And have a nice rest of the day.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to performancedays.eu. Copyright April 2016 by Design and Development GmbH, Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.